Okay, you can ask your question.
I just want to know, when you say the principle of determinism,
what's that?
The principle of determinism,
yeah,
that you just talked, is that the same of karma that the Hinduists use? Is the same?
Oh, no, no, no. Karma doesn't mean determinism. Karma simply means your action. That is what karma means. But the Buddha pointed out that karma is the emotion. Chetana aham bhikkave kammam vadami. Chetana means the emotional excitement. So the emotion is expressed in action. That expression of emotions in action is the karma. Now, just an action, say a Buddha also does things, that is an action, but that is not karma. So karma really is the emotion which is expressed in action. It's an emotional action. That is what karma is. It's not a kind of faith. Some people use the word karma as a kind of fatalism. That is not the proper meaning of karma.
Are we normally say karma for results or vipaka?
Is it yes. That? Very often people begin to worry about circumstances. All worries are worries about circumstances. Something happens and they begin to worry about it. But the important thing is not the circumstance. The Buddha pointed out that the important thing is how you respond to the circumstance. It is your attitude to circumstance. And that attitude is the karma. So the teaching of karma is to point out that all your unhappiness is a result of what you do, how you react to things. It is your reaction that is producing the unhappiness. When some person dies, if you begin to cry, that is how you react to that situation. If you don't react to that situation in that way, you won't become unhappy. You see? So everything that you worry about or fear about is simply how you react to a situation. Now if a person's leg is broken or an arm is broken, if you react to it in the wrong way, you'll be crying and lamenting about it. But if you don't react to it in that way, that won't be something to worry about. You can adapt yourself to that situation. So an intelligent way of dealing with the situation is not karma. The karma is that emotional reaction. Now when we speak of karma, we speak of good karma and bad karma. What is the difference between good karma and bad karma? The bad karma is the expression of the emotion. The good karma is the control of the emotion. Now, every person is self-centered. If you are self-centered, then you will be all the time trying to defend yourself or to satisfy yourself. That is what you are all the time thinking. And any action that is done that way is seen as karma. But in this kind of karma, there are good things that you do. You might help a friend, but you are helping the friend again because of your emotions, because that is your friend, you see. So even if you do it as a good deed, still it is within the emotion. So the emotion actions can be good actions as well as bad actions. But every action that is unselfish is what is called a good action. Every action that is selfish is what is called a bad action. But when we are completely free of emotions, we are free of both selfish and unselfish actions. We are completely free of emotions. We are acting rationally. And that rational action is not karma. That's the important thing to understand. Yeah?
So, I'm just trying to figure out the difference between karma and kilesa. Is that the same?
No, the kilesa is the emotion. The klesha. Klesha means kilutu. Kilutu means the impurity. So klesha simply means the impurity. The impurities are all emotions. All what are called upaklesha. Upaklesha means like jealousy and hatred and pride, and all those are emotional things, you see. All that is rooted in the three things, lobha, dosa and moha. But the branches going from lobha, dosa and moha are called the kleshas. Lobha is the desire for pleasure, and the dosa is the hatred of pain. And moha is simply that thought, I am, and mine. So all behavior based on these three things is karma. Any other questions? Looks like everyone is enlightened now. No questions.
Okay, can we find the parallelism between the Sovan, Sakrudagami, Anagami and the Jhana? Are there any parallel under the stages?
No, this is not, there is nothing parallel about it. The jhanas are all dealing with the emotions and the cognition part. The Sovan, Sakdagami, Anagami, Arihat is based on panya or prajna, and that is through, again, this word panya has to be properly understood. Now we are aware of the world, and that is we are aware through the senses, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and the body touch, the feeling of touch. We are aware of things in the world because of that. That is vijnana. So when we even think in terms of science and even scientific things that we do, even technology and all those things, all that is coming under vijnana. That is vijnana. So the problem is that this vijnana is extroverted. Extroverted means focused on external things. Now, if we can bring this vijnana to turn back and look at itself, like a snake, if you have a snake turning back and looking at itself, now looking at the vijnana, looking at vijnana, that is panya. Vijnana looking at vijnana. Then you begin to see how the mind is working, how the mind is creating this whole world. This is what the Buddha did. By stopping the mind and starting it all over again, he began to see how the mind is doing all these things. That is the panya.
A little confused.
Huh?
Confused.
What's that?
I thought prajna is the knowledge and vijnana is the way you are looking at it, on it. Is it right?
No. That knowledge is the vijnana. Knowledge is the vijnana.
This both are then subjective.
Yes, subjective, of course. The subjective means the vijnana is something subjective, but the vijnana is focused on the objective. The subjective vijnana is focused on the objective.
I think that his question earlier was that about whether there is any parallelism of the jhana and the actual sotapanna and all that other stages, because
yeah.
I have read the similar kind of things, and that Buddha's ancient path of written by the Piyadasi.
Yeah.
And what he explained was that really it is attaching that to the actual Panchanivara Dharma or the five hindrances and
attention.
No, he's explaining it with five hindrances.
Yeah.
And what he was explaining was that really if you actually really understand if you come to the right uniqueness or the ekagatra, that is where that you could see the vitikicha is being eliminated. So then you get the first state of sotapanna. And then he explained that when you have weaken the ill will and the that is tinamiddha and uddhaccha, and then that is actually it's weakened at that point in time, you will be on the second stage of sakudagami, and on the anagami you will be actually eliminating all those two, that means eradicating that, but you still will have the restlessness, and so that will also goes away when you complete the final stage. So when you become arihat. So what he's actually overall what he's saying is that really if you eliminate the five hindrances, and then you can keep that to yourself for a long time, that will reach the final stage or the arhat. So it is a little bit different to what you have explained, so that's what we are just trying to...
Now, the problem is this. You see, you have to first understand that when you enter the first jhana, you have entered a state of purity of mind where all the hindrances are absent. That is a complete purity of mind where the hindrances are gone. But it is gone only for a short while. It is temporary. Temporary purity. Like you go to the shower and take a bath free of all the dirt in your body and you are clean. But that is not permanent. Later again you start sweating and all the dirt can come into your body. So that's why you have to take another bath later. So you might have to take baths every day or maybe several times a day. All that is because it is only a temporary purity. But when you speak of Sotapanna or Sakadagami or Anagami, that is a permanent purity. You see, when you become an Anagami, permanently the desire for pleasure has disappeared. And the hatred of pain has disappeared. That is what an Anagami is. You can't come back with that desire for pleasure and the hatred of pain. But the Anagami.
But then the question is really, can we refer that really Sotapanna as first jhana and then Sakrudagami as second jhana?
No, that is not the question, right? Because the Sotapanna is different from the first jhana.
Okay.
Because in the Sotapanna, you are free of a hindrance. And that is mainly, you are free of vichikiccha. In the Sotapanna, you are free of vichikiccha. And you may be free of worries to some extent. See, but still, the Sotapanna has the desire for pleasure and the hatred of pain.
So they are not completely eradicated?
Not completely eradicated.
It's weaker.
It's weaker.
Not even weak here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, no. The weakness comes when you become Sakadagami. So the Sotapanna state is mainly free from personalizing. You have understood that the body is not yours. You have understood that a sensation is not yours. An emotion is not yours. A thought is not yours. These are just things that are happening due to the presence of the necessary condition. You are not doing any of these things. There is no you to do it, ultimately. That is what the Sotapanna sees. And then, that vichikiccha, which is the mind getting being divided into two, has stopped. Because you have stopped personalizing the emotion. Because you have stopped personalizing the emotion, you are able to give up the emotion. And now you see how the emotion comes up due to the presence of the necessary conditions. And you know how, if you can avoid those conditions, you can stop the emotion. So you see the mechanics of your mind. So when you see the mechanics of the mind, then you can adjust your mind to the way you want. So you have a certain degree of control over the mind. That degree of control over the mind is because you don't personalize the emotions. And you see that the emotion comes from your thoughts. It is your thought that is producing the emotion. Now, if you think a certain thing is very beautiful, oh, it's a beautiful sight or a beautiful sound or a beautiful smell or taste or touch, The moment you think it is very pleasant and beautiful, nice, very good, the desire automatically comes for that. So the emotion comes because you are thinking like that. But if you stop that thinking, the emotion stops coming. So it is the thought that starts the emotion. But the thought comes with also a picture. So that when you say thought, there are two parts. One is the picture, the other is the sentence. The thought comes in two parts. There is a visual part and the verbal part. The verbal part is the sentence, and the visual part is the picture, mental picture. When you think, I must go home, a picture of the home comes into your mind, and then the sentence comes, I must go. Even the going can come in the form of a picture. So every time the picture comes, the words also come. So this is why with that comes the emotion. And then, of course, so there are three things when really, three parts. That now the modern psychologists have become aware of this, and they call it a constellation. These three parts, the picture, the verbs, and the emotion. Three parts are called a constellation. So whenever there is an emotion, there are three parts to it.
Going back to karma.
Yeah.
Buddha was born at one time as a king of elephants. So isn't it that every human being or animal born according to his karma?
Yeah. Oh yes.
Some are born without limbs and some are born without limbs.
Yeah.
Maybe due to some past karma.
Oh yes. But that is the vipaka produced by the karma. But the thing is, people are mainly focusing their mind on the vipaka and worrying about the vipaka. If you worry about the vipaka, you are producing bad karma. And that makes you unhappy. So the karma is how you react to the whatever you have. You begin to understand gradually, huh? That's good.
When you said you look within, now you explain how to get into this first jhana, second jhana, and that kind of thing. When you, if you want to look within, that means you have to follow Eightfold Path within that Eightfold Path. You just keep looking within yourself and you expect there's a development. Is that how you think?
Now what is called satipatthana is looking within. That is the meaning of satipatthana. Sati upatthana, that is the meaning. Sati means attention. Upa means inside. Thana is to place. Dhana is to place. So placing the attention inside is, and that is also the meaning of parimukam satim upattapetva. Parimukha means around. Satim, parimukam satim means the attention that is focused around you, that means to external things. That is what I call extroversion of attention. the extroversion of attention. That is the Parimukhaṁ Sati. Parimukhaṁ Sati upatthapetva. Now the attention that is focused on external things, you bring it inside. Upa means inside, tapetva means to place. You place it inside. That is again focusing the attention within. Yeah?
To clarify what Tata said, what I think he meant was, now when Swayanhansi discussed going into the dhyanas,
mm-hmm.
Methods of going into the dhyanas, and looking within, do you base your process or method of development as following the Eightfold Path as a way to reach the dhyanas? Is that an acceptable method that you're approving of?
Which one? Focusing within.
Question. Yeah, focusing within.
Yeah.
While following the Eightfold Path.
Yeah.
Is that an approvable, acceptable method of attaining the dhyanas?
Oh, yes. That's how you attain the dhyana. Because, you see, how you attain the jhana is all explained in this, what is called the bojjhanga. You see, there are seven parts to the bojjhanga. These are really seven steps. Sati, dhamma vichaya, virya, piti, pasaddi, samadhi. There you are. That is where you come to the jhana, samadhi. And once you enter the samadhi, then comes upekkha. The real upekkha comes, complete perfection of upekkha is in the fourth jhana. Now, sati is that turning inwards. That's why I call it the introversion of attention. Now, when you have introverted attention, where do you focus? You are focusing on the body, the sensations in the body, the emotions and the thoughts. That is the meaning of kayanupassana, vedananupassana, chittanupassana and dhammanupassana. So that is where you are focusing, which is all within. And focusing your attention like that, you become aware of your inner experience analytically. You are analyzing your emotional experience, separating into parts. This is the body, this is the sensation, this is the emotion, this is the thought. That is called Dhamma Vichaya. That is the meaning of Dhamma Vichaya. Dhamma really is your experience, the inner experience. Vichaya means the analysis, Vichaya. And so Dhamma Vichaya, you become more and more aware of the different parts of your experience. In this way. And then you begin to see the conditioned nature of this experience. The conditioned nature means first the perception part comes, then comes the thinking part, then comes the emotional part, and then comes the action part. So it is the action part which is the body, really. And when you think of the sensations, you are becoming aware of the tensions in your body that make you feel uncomfortable, or when the tensions are absent, you feel comfortable. And then comes the awareness of the emotion, that is the chittanupassana. Then comes the awareness of the thinking part, which is the dhammanupassana. So, when you have become fully aware of that mental process going on then you have gained strength. The strength to stop the emotion. That is the strength. You have got what today people call willpower. That is the real willpower. That means the strength to gain control over the emotion. So when you have got the strength, now the emotions disappear. And when the emotions disappear, what happens? You feel happy. When the emotions are absent and the mind is tranquil, you are happy. That happiness is what is called piti. When your mind is happy, the body relaxes. That happiness relaxes the body. That is passaddhi. There the Buddha says, piti manasa kayam passambati. When the mind is happy, the body relaxes. Because the tensions are due to the emotions. The mind is happy because the emotions are absent. And so, when the emotions are absent, the body relaxes. Then, passaddha kayo sukhang vedyati. That means, when the body is relaxed, the body feels comfortable. Sukha is comfort. Passaddha kayo sukhang vedyati. That means when the body is relaxed, the body feels comfortable. Sukino chittan samadhiyati. When the body feels comfortable, the mind becomes still. That is the meaning of samadhi. Chitta ekagrata. Chitta ekagrata means the mind is in one position. It's not moving about. The stillness of the mind.
I had a follow-up question then.
Yeah.
Now, as Swaminathan was describing this as a method following the Eightfold Path and looking within is a process of developing into the first dhyana, I was wondering whether now, we can establish that the dhyanas are temporary, purities of mind.
Mm.
So, then looking within and following the Eightfold Path, when we reach the dhyana and we continually practice the Eightfold Path and looking within, does that mean our mind is in a state of dhyana until we gain some further insight through the looking within and Noble Eightfold Path? Eightfold Path to get into the second dhyana. Do you understand? It's not like a 1 hour, 2 hour thing, the dhyanas. Is it right to say that the dhyanas would be like a day long, a week long, a month long till one can, if one continues, goes into the second dhyana, to the third and fourth and so on?
It all depends. You see, You can be in the first jhana for 7 days if you like. It all depends. But the important thing is that dhyana is still, it is temporary. Because it is only as long as you remain in that jhana. It's like sleeping, you see. You might sleep and you wake up again. You see, jhana is simply resting the mind. It is simply resting the mind. That is what jhana is. But that resting becomes helpful to get panya. The purpose of the samadhi is panya, which is the insight. Now this is why when you enter the first jhana in the bodhchangas, the next step after samadhi is upekkha. So when you enter samadhi, the next step is upekkha. Upekkha is looking within. Now, sati. You see, the bhujangas begin with sati and end with upekkha. Upekkha is the seventh of the bhujangas. Last one, which is upekkha. Now, what is the difference between sati and upekkha? Sati is focusing within. Now, I translate it as introspection, no, not introspection, introversion of attention. Sati is the introversion of attention. Upekkha is introspection. Now, what is the difference between these two? The difference is, the difference between these two words, looking and seeing. You can look at something. Only when you have looked at it, you begin to see it. So the upekkha is seeing and sati is looking. So there is this distance between the looking and the seeing is covered by dhamma vicha, viriya, piti, pasaddi and samadhi. So you see, the how many steps is that? Five, huh?
Seven.
You have five steps between sati and upekkha. Yeah?
What I was trying to clarify is now, if we are to follow the Noble Eightfold Path and look within, that is a continual process in order to gain the get into the first dhyana.
Yeah.
Now, when we get into the fourth dhyana, we've established that the fourth dhyana is where you are aware of things, but you do not, there are no concepts created, right?
Not only fourth jhana, when you enter the second jhana, no concepts.
So then, if it's a continual process of purification, and when I say this, I'm thinking that we are practicing in our daily life,
mm-hmm.
every moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you would be in the second jhana for day, week, a month, because you're continuing processing?
As long as you like.
So then, if this is a daily practice, and let's say, for instance, a person's in the second dhyana, where no concepts are created.
Yeah.
How is he, while in his daily life practicing, have the ability to, you know, I mean, as you go into third and fourth dhyana as well, how are you ability to interact with the environment, communicate with others, because all these
now,
mental
this
processes
is, this
are...
Now, this is why I am saying that you can't do it in the lay life. Now, I have said this earlier, some people don't like that. You see, if you are going to live as a layman, going to school and studying and doing all kinds of jobs and doing cooking and eating and all these things, you can't be practicing the jhanas like that. This is the problem. This is why you have to get out of that kind of life to do it.
But once you gain an insight and a perspective, can't you immerse yourself back into the life with a new perspective and confront the obstacles?
Yeah. That is, with the panya,
right.
Like the Buddha, that's what the Buddha did, went back to the life. You can do it. You can even enter the first jhana and go back and live in the world. But while living in the world and doing all these things that you are doing in the normal life, you can't enter the first jhana. Because your mind has to be purified to a certain level. Without purifying the mind, you can't enter the first jhana.
But So what you're saying is, you can enter first jhana and then you can lead a normal life?
You can lead a normal life, but you'll be out of the jhana.
No, no.
You said
initially that while you are leading a normal life, you cannot enter first jhana. That I agree. But can you attain jhana and then lead a normal life?
Yeah. Of course, it's like you are sleeping and you coming out and wake up and do various things.
No, I think his question is about that really. Can you come back to the normal life and
maintain the jhana?
Yes.
What do you call the normal life? Is it the family life? Or is it simply going on Pindapath and collecting the food?
It's normal life.
There you are. That cannot be done.
That's
no. That cannot be done.
But that's what I want to understand.
But when you say that cannot be done, I'm just...
No, it can be done, but yes. You'll be out of the jhana.
No.
You can't be in the jhana and do all those things.
No, because that's what I was inquiring about. If it's a daily practice of following the Eightfold Path and looking within,
yeah.
That's something we should be doing every moment.
Every
in
moment.
Our life.
Yeah, yeah.
So then if that's the process of also getting into the dhyanas,
yeah.
Would that mean that the person at every moment in his daily life be in the dhyana, you know, being in a certain dhyana?
Not in the lay life, but in a monk's life it can be done.